From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. Juneteenth will now be an observed holiday for most city and borough of Juneau employees starting next week. Juneteenth is already a national holiday, and for the first time this year, an Alaska state holiday. It commemorates the day when enslaved people in Galveston learned from a Union soldier that they were free, more than 2 months after the end of the Civil War. The holiday is recognized on June 19th. The change for most city staff comes after negotiations with a union representing some city employees resulted in the addition of the holiday and wage increases over the next few years. The city then passed a resolution granting the holiday and wage increases to non-union represented city employees in order to maintain equity across departments and to be a more competitive employer. Employees represented by two other unions won't see the additional holiday or wage increase this year. Juneau City Manager says the city is still in negotiations with those unions. Most city employees will also see a 3% wage increase this year and next, and a 5% increase in fiscal year 2028. They will also get two lump sum payments of $2,750 and $2,000 the next 2 years, respectively. The addition of the Juneteenth holiday is effective immediately and will be observed next Thursday. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 60 degrees and sunny this afternoon. The low tonight is 44, and tomorrow it looks like we could see some rain. There's a 50% chance after 10 a.m. Friday looks about the same, another 50% chance of rain, with temperatures in the 50s. This weekend looks like it could be sunny, with temperatures breaking into the 60s. Juneau's three Democratic state lawmakers met with constituents downtown earlier this week to share some of what happened and what didn't happen during this year's legislative session. The first session of the 34th Alaska Legislature wrapped up late last month, and House Representative Sarah Hannan said the state's financial issues were a top concern among lawmakers.
It was a really tough budgeting cycle. There is no fat. We are cutting off and amputating parts of the body.
Lawmakers were able to pass a balanced budget. Major pieces of legislation that make up the state's annual budget are now on Governor Mike Dunleavy's desk. The budget outlines how much state funding will go to Alaska's public schools next year. Lawmakers increased the state's basic per-student funding by $700 this year. House Representative Andy Story says the permanent boost to K-12 funding is long overdue.
We have flat-funded education for so long that we have got constituents screaming across the state to please fund our public education.
In a joint session, the legislature successfully voted to override a veto by the governor of House Bill 57, which is a permanent funding increase, among other policies. But the governor can still choose to reduce the funding when he passes the budget. It's unclear if he will or not. He said in Fairbanks yesterday that he'd release his line item vetoes this week, possibly as soon as tomorrow. Lawmakers also passed a budget with a $1,000 permanent fund dividend for Alaskans. It's an all-time low for the state's annual oil wealth check when adjusted for inflation. Senator Jesse Kiel says it will continue to shrink unless the state drastically rethinks how it spends its money.
Math isn't that hard. Revenues don't go up. Costs do go up. Services don't go down. Something's going to give. And the only source I can see, the PFD goes away. That's a bad outcome. That's the path we're on.
The delegates also expressed concern about potential cuts to federal Medicaid reimbursements and how those may impact the state's budget and Alaskans' access to health care. The second session of the 34th Alaska Legislature is set to begin next January. Because the Alaska Legislature operates on a two-session cycle, lawmakers will be able to pick up bills where they left off. And in Juneau, a traditional subsistence site owned by the federal government is now one step closer to returning to its original tribal owners. KTOO's Clarice Larson reports.
On Monday, the Juneau Assembly unanimously approved a resolution to accept Mayflower Island from the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, with the intent to give it to the Douglas Indian Association. Mayflower Island is a small, 3-acre island adjacent to Douglas Harbor and Sandy Beach, and connected to Douglas Island. Its Tlingit name is Khot-Tok, which means beside the island. DIA Councilmember Barbara Cadiente Nelson spoke to the Assembly on behalf of the tribe's president.
This is a significant moment for the tribe, and one that, if we could have all 800 members would be present to witness this, it belongs to the tribe. And we thank you for all the due diligence and the work you've put forth since 2012 to this moment.
Cadiente Nelson referenced the year when construction workers accidentally unearthed three burial sites at Douglas Island Sayac Gastineau Community School. Since then, the city and association have collaborated on projects to acknowledge the historical trauma the tribe experienced. Mayflower Island once served as a traditional subsistence site and yielded a herring run and spawn used by the Douglas Indian Village. The village was burned by the Douglas City government in 1962. The city and borough of Juneau formally apologized for the burning last fall. Tribal member Dion Cadiente Lighty says the resolution was more than six decades in the making.
63 years later, here we are today, looking at this resolution. Thank you for writing this resolution to affirm a promise made 63 years ago that this land will be restored to the tribe.
The property has been under the federal government's stewardship since 1890 under various departments. The island was originally reserved for the U.S. Navy to use as a naval station before it was transferred to the Federal Bureau of Mines, which built a mineral laboratory there. The BLM then took over the property in 1996, and the U.S. Coast Guard used the site under an agreement with the BLM until 2023. Alyssa Cadiente Lighty Blattner thanked the assembly and the city staff for working with the Douglas Indian Association to make the transfer possible.
Its return represents the restoration of a sacred connection and a step forward in healing historic harm. Following the city's apology for the 1962 burning of our village, this transfer shows what is possible when we work together with respect, truth, and shared purpose.
Dan Blydorn, the city's lands and resource manager, called the approval on Monday a critical step in the process. He said the property transfer will still likely take a few years to complete. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And a contractor died while doing maintenance at a popular cruise tourism facility near Ketchikan last month. As KRBD's Jack Dale reports, the company that hired the man has a history of safety problems.
State troopers responded to a call in mid-May. A 36-year-old Ketchikan man had fallen from a high wall. He was in the old pulp mill in Ward Cove. Someone was giving him CPR. When troopers arrived, they declared Adrian Bransford dead at the scene. Christine Morrison says her husband got the call first. Bransford was one of her good friends. Bransford was a contractor. He was doing some work at the former mill. Morrison says she was shocked and angry.
Adrian died in a situation that seems crazy. I'm confused and I'm frustrated, and I understand that accidents happen, but Adrian, I don't know. I mean, he just was a beautiful human.
According to compliance records from the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, Bransford's accident may not be the first. There's been a history of unsafe working conditions at the former mill. Like, OSHA has fined the mill's operator nearly $225,000 for two separate incidents in the last year leading up to the accident that killed Bransford. It leaves Bransford's friends feeling confused. Morrison is in recovery from addiction, but she says Bransford was there for her in her darkest moments, reminding her how to stay alive.
Just one of those people, like, time could pass, and as soon as we're hanging out again, even if it's just, like, passing by in the grocery store, it's like no time had ever gone by that we weren't, like, super close.
And this seems to be a common sentiment about Bransford. Here's Kyle Quinn, part owner of the mill where Bransford died.
We weren't real close in the last few years, but every time you saw him, he had a way of just erasing that time in between the last time you saw him and making you feel incredible. And so it's heartbreaking. It's killing us right now.
Quinn says he knew Bransford growing up. They went to the same elementary school, worshipped at the same church. Quinn is the CEO of Alaska Port Innovations, LLC. They purchased a lot of the mill and the surrounding acreage in Ward Cove last year. Quinn says his company didn't contract Bransford, though.
The mill at Ward Cove is operated by Ward Cove Dock Group. And so that where the incident happened is inside of their leasehold.
The Ward Cove Group is the other major operator in the former pulp mill. In 2019, they teamed up with Norwegian Cruise Lines and built a two-berth cruise destination there called the Mill at Ward Cove. Hundreds of thousands of visitors a year now come off Norwegian ships and into a lofty brick welcome center in the old mill. There's a gift shop, a beer garden, exhibits, demonstrations, and fleets of buses waiting to take them on tours and all that. Ward Cove Dock Group CEO Jeff Gawal said in a text message that Bransford was repairing bricks on a high wall at their cruise facility when he was killed. In the fall of 2024, OSHA investigated a complaint at the mill that resulted in four citations. Things like not meeting OSHA's guidelines for head protection and training requirements, but also a failure of their, quote, duty to have fall protection and falling object protection. The story the records tell is that OSHA launched a second investigation into the Ward Cove Dock Group a couple months later because there was an accident. OSHA slapped the company with two more violations they called willful and serious. One of them was, again, a failure to provide fall and falling object protection. The report says that the company had to fix the problem by March of this year. OSHA hasn't fulfilled our requests for more detailed reports on the incident or if the violations were fixed, and GWAL didn't respond to a follow-up request for comment or details on the violations. Morrison says, for her part, even if her friend's death feels unfair and confusing, she'll never forget what Bransford did for her.
I didn't go a day without him in my life for many, many months, and the impact that that has on me will last forever.
OSHA is currently investigating the circumstances of Bransford's accident. Reporting for KRBD, I'm Jack Darrell.
And this is KTOO.